Welcome to the podcast series from the National Centre for Research Methods at the University of Southampton. In this podcast, Dr. Susie Weller from the University of Southampton discusses her NCRM-funded methodological innovation project, looking at the potential and pitfalls of using Skype and FaceTime interviews in qualitative research.
So the overriding aim of the project was to investigate the implications for introducing internet video calls as a new method of data generation into an established qualitative longitudinal project for two purposes. First, I was interested in looking at the possible use of such interviews for providing catch-up data about participants' lives between researcher visits, thereby helping to ensure long-term engagement in the project as well as generating some new data. And second, I wanted to explore the implications for using such interviews as a time-efficient and cost-effective alternative to or augmentation of face-to-face co-present interviews.
So you went about this making use, as you said, of a long-term study of young people that you were involved with. Explain a bit about Your Space, which is the name of that project, what it is and exactly what it's about.
So I've been working with Rosalind Edwards, also at the University of Southampton, on a qualitative longitudinal study called Your Space, Siblings and Friends. And we've been following the lives of 50 young people from across Britain for over 10 years. And throughout, the substantive focus has been on the meanings, experiences and flows of their prescribed and chosen relationships, so relationships with their siblings and friends, and how these relate to their sense of self as their individual and family biographies unfold. And in recent years, we've been particularly interested in following their trajectories to adulthood through periods of economic change. Our participants come from a diverse range of backgrounds and live in a variety of family circumstances that have shifted for some over the course of the study. They were born between 1989 and 1996, and they've been interviewed on four occasions in 2003, 2007, 2009, and most recently in 2013. The first three interviews comprised a flexible range of tools, including photography, network mapping, timelines, vignettes, all consolidated by an in-depth, semi-structured interview. And in the main, these interviews have taken place in participants' homes. But the fourth interview signalled a methodological departure for the Your Space project, incorporating mediated communication or communication via digital technologies rather than physical co-present interviewing. By building on and extending an existing qualitative longitudinal study in this way, it's provided an ideal opportunity, really, to explore the potential and the implications of shifting to remote online interviewing on issues that really matter to qualitative researchers, such as the research relationship, rapport and data quality.
So as you say, the Your Space study really did present you with a great opportunity to see whether carrying out online interviews could somehow be a useful tool. So what exactly did you do?
I interviewed all Your Space participants. I invited them to take part in an online interview, offering them a choice over whether they preferred to use Skype, FaceTime or their mobile phone. And the majority of the sample took part in what I would call a short catch-up interview. This was to assess whether remote modes might be a useful way of keeping in touch with participants between the main interviews. And these interviews generally lasted for about 30 minutes. 10 young people from the sample that reflected the diversity of the sample were invited to take part in an extended interview, more akin to the discussions I'd had with them in their home. And these generally lasted for about an hour and a half and were used to assess whether internet video calls might be a viable substitute for the conventional physical co-present interview. The substantive focus was on young people's trajectories to adulthood during economic change.
So what exactly were you looking at and why?
First of all, I adopted a participatory approach, focusing on participants' perspectives on the implications of the shift in mode on their own interview experience, aspects of disclosure, their imagined future engagement and their relationship with me and with the research project. And I gathered feedback from the whole sample at the end of the interview and anonymously via an online survey. And then for the second element of the analysis, I applied some of Irving Goffman's interactionist conceptual tools as analytic resources for assessing the implications of remote against physical co-present interviewing. And for this, I focused on those 10 extended interviews. This framework is especially apt for highlighting the workings of rapport. And Goffman was interested in documenting and classifying, as well as highlighting the significance of seemingly mundane things or banal things, the subtleties and the nuances, that the real minutiae of everyday life, and things that would be taken for granted in most interviews. So I study participants' interviews in great detail, looking back longitudinally over their past interviews that I conducted in their homes and comparing the interaction between us, between these two interview modes.
So I wonder how your participants responded to the whole idea of being interviewed over Skype or FaceTime rather than face-to-face.
Well, the participants in the Your Space Project are long-standing. They've been involved in the study for over 10 years now and seem very happy to be interviewed remotely. And the feedback highlighted motivations for continued involvement that were founded on a personal long-term commitment and loyalty to the project and to some degree to our research relationship, regardless of the interview mode. The majority rated the experience as good, and 83% of those who completed the online survey said it was just as good as a home visit, and all described feeling comfortable with being interviewed remotely. Using remote modes, importantly, made it easier for many to continue to take part, especially as some were leading quite transient lives, living between home and university, working or moving into work, travelling or residing in temporary accommodation. And for a small minority, this was the only means by which they could take part. The flexibility and convenience of this particular approach encouraged one who dropped out of the last round of interviews to rejoin the project. Although the emphasis of the study was on using internet video calls to conduct interviews, a significant proportion elected to participate using a phone interview and therefore an audio-only discussion, often using their mobile phone, as this permitted even greater flexibility. And the uptake of internet video calls is very much dependent on their perceptions of the reliability of internet access where they were living and of the general dependability of the application. They all felt that remote modes were appropriate for the study, although many did say that they felt they were less likely to participate online had they not already had a pre-existing research relationship with me. And two young women said they were deterred from taking part. They simply felt too shy to talk online.
Digital technologies really have transformed all of our lives, but there obviously can be problems. What sort of problems did you face?
Well, firstly, it won't surprise you that a strong and sustained connection was essential to the flow of conversation. For rapport and for avoiding misunderstandings, Skype generally proved to be more reliable than FaceTime, and poor quality audio made the task of both the researcher and participant difficult, with much energy consumed carefully listening to responses. So while there were some technical challenges, for instance, establishing a sustained and clear connection, instances where this became a real hindrance were rare. With the audio-only interviews, not being able to see non-verbal gestures was a real issue. We interpret speech visually as well as audibly, so seeing the participants speak is important to our understanding. If the interview is audio-only or if the video is patchy, then the interview lacks the richness that comes from non-verbal communication. For Goffman, expressions given off, such as gestures, facial expressions and body language, can be more revealing than what is actually said, and they shape the impressions that researchers and participants have of one another and how what is said is interpreted.
What about when it came to what people were prepared or happy to tell you about in those circumstances compared with a face-to-face interview?
Interestingly, participants felt they were just as likely to divulge the details of their lives online. That said, I felt remote modes were less appropriate for the often unforeseen disclosure of distressing stories. Audio-only discussions, or those where the video was patchy, didn't provide me with opportunities to meaningfully demonstrate care. I also felt I lost the spatial context of participants' lives through remote interviewing. I lacked the sensory experience of exploring their home and their neighbourhood that I would have had during a home visit. Instead, our understandings are shaped by the reach and position of the participant's webcam. And this has implications not only for the researcher's understandings of context, but also of rapport. What was also lacking in remote modes was the use of impromptu props, so artifacts that participants presented, often without prompt, to help narrate their lives. So in the physical co-present interviews, mobile phones, for instance, featured as part of stories about friendships, whilst examples of schoolwork said much about self-confidence. And such props often helped sustain focus or acted as aid memoirs, tangible signifiers of life events.
Now, the benefits of using Skype in a UK-wide survey seem obvious in terms of time and cost savings, but were there any other positives that you came across or you concluded?
But I think one of the key advantages of using remote interviews for both one-off and longitudinal studies is the potential they provide for widening participation, easily allowing the inclusion of widely distributed samples, as is the case in the Your Space study, or those living overseas or in isolated areas. I think one of the key findings and one of the key advantages was that remote modes were often experienced as less daunting by participants. The pressure of presence was a term coined by one participant, but echoed in the sentiments of many others. And they saw online interviews as less formal encounters, much more akin to a chat with a friend, as opposed to the formality of a researcher visiting them in their home. Many felt more relaxed in their own space, in their own separate space, a finding that really does chime with Goffman's suggestion that physical co-presence runs the risk of exposure or embarrassment. And with that comes the invisibility of the props of the research encounter, for example, the recording equipment, which also help put participants at ease. But with that comes the danger of over-disclosure, the potential for participants, and particularly participants that have had a long-term relationship with the researcher, that they lose sight of the conversation's purpose, and there's the danger that they might be more likely to disclose more than they perhaps would feel comfortable doing so if they were constantly reminded that it was a research interview.
Now, you talked earlier on about the whole, you know, the very much the importance of the relationship between interviewer and respondent. So I wonder how that whole question of the relationship between the interviewer and respondent and how face-to-face and online interviews played out in that context.
I think having that long-term research relationship and having met them in person beforehand was very important in terms of building the rapport at the outset and encouraging participants to take part in another interview. Visible, not physical, co-presence proved to be more significant in determining the nature of the interaction. So what was important was the observation of gestures, facial expressions and body language. So if there's good quality video connection that allows both parties to observe and respond to non-verbal gestures, then the interview is often as rich and detailed and actually may be more conducive to disclosure as the experience lacks that pressure of presence.
Just finally then, Susie, what would you say you learned from the project? You've mentioned some of the key findings, really interesting findings. But what were the main things you would say that you learn and that other researchers might take away from this?
Internet video calls, I think, it can be technically challenging. But if the audio and the video quality are good and the researcher and participant are comfortable with the mode, then they offer a tremendous degree of flexibility and informality that physical co-presence interviews can lack. I've actually produced a training podcast based on the project outcomes. It's available on the National Centre for Research Methods YouTube channel. And on that, there are a range of top tips for researchers. It covers the technicalities and practicalities of setting up remote interviewing and also provides a flavour of some of the key findings relating to some of the interactional issues between researcher and participant.
Dr. Susie Weller was discussing her NCRM project, The Potential of Video Telephony in Qualitative Longitudinal Research, a Participatory and Interactionist Approach to Assessing Remoteness and Rapport. More details about the project are available on the NCRM website, and as Susie mentioned, her training audio slideshow is available on the NCRM YouTube channel.